So thank you very much for having me here, and especially to Ali for the invitation. It's a pleasure to present some of the work that we're doing. As Ali was saying, this is sort of data analysis and a paper that has come out from a European project that we got funded quite a few years ago now and finished in 2009. But as Ali said, we collected a massive amount of data on the political and civic integration of migrants across a number of cities in Europe, in various European countries. And the data is so rich that we still have a lot of things to say and look into this data. I will, at the end of the presentation, show you where the data are available for everyone to use in a Harvard Dataverse, so please have a look at that, and we would be really excited if people start using the data more, as Ali is doing in his own work. The talk I will be giving today is research in progress, in the sense that it's a kind of early draft of a paper that we hope to get published soon when we send it to a journal, and look specifically at the political, and by that we mean party, preferences of migrants across Europe. So the first motivation of the paper and the reason why we're looking into this is that, of course, as you will know, there's an increasing number of studies of migrants' political integration and participation in Europe. But in reality, we know very little about what are the party preferences of migrants, in particular in Europe, in a cross-national perspective. There's a lot, a wealth of country case studies. So some people have published work in Germany. Others, including Stephen, have looked into this topic for Britain. There's a lot of studies in the US, a few in the Netherlands, a few in some Scandinavian countries. But all of these are sort of independent country case studies. From that scholarship, the general assumption that we get and the sort of general types of funding is that migrants primarily vote for left-wing parties in Europe. And that's the sort of general sense that you would get from this kind of single country case studies. But the evidence is, as I said, really quite scattered and mostly reduced to only a few countries, mostly in Northern and Western Europe. And we find increasingly a few individual studies that are hinting at cases that depart from this general pattern of migrants being mostly supporting left-wing parties. So the goal of this paper is to investigate this whole topic a little bit more in depth, and primarily with the advantage of using cross-national and cross-city data in Europe. So we look into it by looking at the party preference formation and direction in a number of settings in Europe. And we want to specifically be able to examine different types and competing explanations of migrants' party preference formation. Among them, we look at factors relating to socioeconomic status, socialization processes, political socialization processes, ethnicity, policy preferences, and political opportunity structures. I will start by just giving a brief overview of the competing explanations that have been put forward in the literature about what might explain the differences in native migrant party preferences, and also the gaps that we find in actually migrants forming party preferences and party allegiances at all in the first place. The ways we have found in the literature to account for these gaps are, on the one hand, explained by reference to socioeconomic status. The first, as you will know, in most European countries and in most countries as a whole, migrants are a category of the population who tend to have less resources, both in terms of financial capital, but also human capital, like education, social capital as well, just as a factor of having moved from other countries and very often not being recognized, for instance, their educational attainment or their degrees, and having less access to income or other types of resources. They also tend, as a group, to be concentrated in occupations and job sectors that provide them with less income. And due to working patterns and working times, they might have less access to time and to social capital because of work demands. So in general terms, we find in the literature that a lot of studies emphasize that resources are what are the key to explaining, in general terms, reduced levels of political engagement by migrants, but also, to a certain extent, they might be relating to whether and how they form party preferences, whether in the first place they engage in politics in the countries where they live, whether they engage in terms of interests, of cognitive aspects of, as well, and whether they are kind of actively engaging in terms of political participation. This disadvantage leads to a number of hypotheses that we try to examine in this paper. First of all, we look at whether resources and the social structure position of migrants account for the gaps in party preference formation. So that is whether they actually have a preference for a party in terms of electoral behavior. And we also look at whether that shapes the type of preferences that they form once they form them. And in this case, whether they are more likely to support left-wing parties. The whole logic of migrants' preference for left-wing parties and the relation to resources has been linked in the literature to their more likely working class positions in the countries where they live. And as a consequence, if migrants are, in general terms, of course, there are differences between different groups. It's not the same. Certain kind of professional migrants, for instance, EU migrants from Northern and Western Europe in this country, if you compare them to migrants that come from Southeast Asia or from Africa, there can be differences, but overall, in kind of in average terms, migrants tend to have job roles and occupations that are falling within working class categories, and that might just lead to them naturally to be inclined to support for left-wing parties. We also look into explanations relating to political socialization. There is a huge literature in political science and political sociology that emphasizes the role of political socialization, both within the family but also within the networks and the groups of peers. In what relates specifically to migrants, a key part of the debate here relates to transnational politics. As you will know, there's a sort of subfield in migration studies that looks specifically at how migrants relate or don't relate to their country of origin, if they're first generation migrants, or to the countries of the parents when we are talking about second generations or even third generations. This scholarship has been developed initially in the US, but actually in Europe is actually quite developed as well, and it sort of emphasizes the fact that migrants tend to keep in touch with the country of origin or the country of ancestry. And there's a huge debate in the literature in regards to whether that keeping contact with the homeland, for a shortcut, shapes the way they engage in politics in the country of residence or settlement. There are two opposing views in relation to this. Some scholars argue that homeland politics or transnational politics distracts migrants from becoming integrated in the politics of the country of residence or settlement of their ancestors. Other scholars have been showing increasingly that actually there are spillovers in relation to both types of engagement. It is unclear what the nature of this spillover really is. Sometimes we can think of the spillover as relating to the resources and the mobilization that goes on in the associations. In the US, they would be called hometown associations. In Europe, we don't necessarily call them hometown associations. associations, but like Turkish associations for the Turkish migrant group, or Moroccan associations, or Latino associations. And you could think of those spillovers in various ways. One is, well, if you are engaged in issues relating to the politics of Ecuador in those associations, at the same time that you receive information about the politics of Ecuador, you're likely to receive information also about what is happening in Britain, if you're living in Britain and you're an Ecuadorian. There will be information transmitted, but there will be also situations in which you might, as an individual Ecuadorian, become mobilized by those associations in specific circumstances when issues that are of concern to Ecuadorians as migrants in Britain arise. So for instance, issues relating to restrictive migration policies, or relating to visas or work permits or issues like that. And there's a lot of work in the US especially that shows that that sort of spillover effects of engagement in relation to homeland politics can translate into political engagement in the countries of origin. The other dimension of this spillover, which would not technically be a spillover, but rather kind of different causation process, can be relating to the fact that if you're socialized in your family as an individual who cares about politics in the home country of your parents or your own home country, you're quite likely to just be interested in politics in general, full stop. So you're being socialized simultaneously into political interests, and you're going to be looking and engaging, being interested and being engaged in politics, both in relation to your homeland and in relation to the country where you live. And I could give an example relating to me in this particular case. Before I moved into Britain, I was highly politically interested in Spain as well. And it's not whether I keep in touch with Spain or with Spaniards in the UK that actually makes the difference. It's the fact that I was socialized politically as someone who cares about politics because my parents cared about politics. And you just transfer that socialization into the new country where you live. So it's not so much my engagement with homeland politics, but actually the fact that I was socialized politically in that way. Of course, survey data most of the time will not allow you to make those distinctions, but what it's important is to understand that through one or the other mechanism, you might see the same results, that engagement in homeland politics and engagement in the politics of the resident of the country of residence are not separate from each other. So we look into aspects relating to political socialization in two ways. The first one is, let me see if I can go backwards. The first one is relating to the capacity to relate to the left-right dimension. And this connects to the wide range of scholarship showing that because politics is structured primarily, not only, but primarily along the left-right divide in European societies, we might find situations in which individuals who have been socialized, politically socialized in a country where that cleavage, that divide is not the organizing, the structuring divide of politics, might actually find it more complicated to understand what's going on in the countries to which they move. And that's relating to what I was saying before about process of political socialization that don't relate so much to your connection to the homeland per se, but how you were brought up during childhood and adolescence. So we look specifically at that aspect of the political socialization process and whether citizens who are unable to relate to the left-right dimension are less likely to form a party preference in the countries where they reside. The second aspect that we look at is at the voting behavior in relation to homeland elections. And here, as I was saying before, the expectation is that if you're participating in homeland elections, you will be more likely to participate and engage fully in the political process in the countries where you live, either because of this kind of overarching political socialization process by which you are raised as a participant in your family, either here in the countries of residence or in the homeland country, or because of this kind of spillover effects that I was saying before of information and mobilization. The other aspect that we look in relation to political socialization is relating to the consistency of left-right party preferences. So again, following the example before, if the left-right divide is an important dimension of competition and of structuration of the politics of the country of origin of migrants, we should expect that they carry over that sort of positioning to the country where they settle or where their parents are settling. So if they were voting left-wing parties in those countries or are voting left-wing parties in those countries, we expect them to vote for left-wing parties in the countries of residence as well. The third type of scholarship that we look into, and so this is kind of these are sometimes alternative explanations or complementary explanations to differences in party preferences between natives and migrants, starts from the point of assumption that rather than following some form of social class perspective or allegiance or identification, migrants as other voters in society are rational actors. And they're rational voters. They will, following the Downsian thesis, vote for those parties that maximize their utility. So those parties that offer the platforms that they prefer, in a way, that are closer to their own political preferences and their own interests. If we depart from that assumption, the assumption that migrant voters don't differ in terms of how they vote to the majority population and that they are rational voters, you would expect that they will be choosing parties or forming party allegiances with those parties that offer a platform that is closest to their interest and their preferences. On the basis of this kind of alternative theoretical framework, what we look into in this paper is whether negative perceptions of current immigration-related policies, as those we don't assume that these are the only ones that would interest immigrants, but we first of all, these are the indicators that we have, but also these are indicators relating to policies that they are likely to care a lot about because they affect them directly. We look at whether those negative perceptions affect or not their party allegiance, and specifically the parties that they choose to support. So if they have more negative perceptions of current immigration-related policies, we are expecting migrants to be more likely to form a party preferences and also to support left-wing parties. There are other two kind of elements and components to the understanding of how migrants behave politically and how they form their party preferences. A whole range of scholarship has been discussing in detail how ethnic identity and interests are articulated as a distinctive cleavage and whether that leads to ethnic politics and ethnic mobilization. It's a moody gadget. What we're looking in this paper as a kind of approximation to the whole debate about whether ethnic politics operates in electoral processes across Europe and whether they are able to structure the preferences of migrants across Europe is to look into whether we find evidence of ethnic block voting in the data. So if we assume that migrants are organizing not just as migrants in general, but as specific members of a certain ethnicity, then we should find variations within city depending on the ethnic group that we're looking at. So we would expect, for instance, perhaps Italians in Geneva to vote differently to the Turks. If what you're finding is that ethnic entrepreneurs are forming alliances with political parties in a way that is strategic to actually maximizing their interests as a group, then you would find some differences rather than finding that all migrants are voting and supporting the same party at once. So this is a kind of a slightly different way of looking at differences between the natives and the migrants that emphasizes the distinctiveness and the different political strategies and mobilization processes in which different groups of migrants might engage in. Finally, the paper tries to also bring in a whole range of scholarship that argues that in addition to individual level and kind of meso level organizational or mobilization aspects like the one relating to ethnicity and ethnic bloc voting, that also the wider political context matters for who migrants support in terms of party allegiances, but also in relation to how much they engage in politics and how much they are able to become incorporated and integrated into politics. The political opportunity structures approach, as a lot of you will know, emerged from the social movement scholars scholarship and is emphasizing the fact that how the state organizes and how the political actors interact shapes the way that citizens, and in that scholarship, social movements and social movement organizations mobilize, and to what extent they are able to actually mobilize successfully. More recently, that approach to political opportunity structures has been used by migration scholars, in my view, quite effectively, to emphasize the fact that the setting in terms of the rights that migrants are afforded and what we sometimes call the citizenship regime or integration model, how it shapes the ways in which migrants participate in politics, how they perceive the openness of the political system to incorporate them, and also which opportunities they have both as individuals, but as groups, to engage with the political process. So in the context of this scholarship, we hypothesize that favorable rights settings will provide legitimacy to intervene in the public sphere and hence will contribute to reduce the gap in party preference formation. Additionally, we also expect that settings that are more favorable in terms of being more generous to migrants' rights will affect how party allegiances are formed in terms of native migrant gaps, but also the likelihood that ethnic bloc voting will happen. And we expect this to be much more likely in multicultural settings where actually ethnicity is not problematic, is not viewed as problematic, but it's embraced and it's accommodated. So the fact that different, first of all, that migrants have different cultural needs, preference, and cultural assets that they want to protect is accommodated in multicultural settings, where other settings that are closer to integration models that we could define as assimilationist instead are kind of making it difficult to embrace and to mobilize around your ethnicity, because ethnicity is considered something of a dirty label that you shouldn't be mobilizing around. In that context, we expect that ethnic bloc voting will be easier or kind of more likely to emerge in multicultural settings. So that's the general introduction. I will go a little bit quicker on the methods and data. We analyze and sort of assess these competing and sometimes complementary expectations with survey data that we collected between 2004 and 2008 in the context of the local Multidem project in 7 European cities in 5 countries. In each of the cities, we had random samples of between two and three migrant groups, which were chosen because of their size within the city. So these were all relevant in terms of size in the cities that we study. We also tried to balance a bit different waves of immigration within those cities, so that we had one group that was of more recent arrival and one group of less recent arrival, and also the religious composition, so that in all of the cities we would have at least one group which was primarily of Muslim religion. In all of the cities, we have a comparison group of natives, of the general native population as a standpoint, so that we can actually discuss and talk about gaps if they do exist. And the pool sample includes kind of nearly 6,000 individuals of immigrant background and around 2,500 of native respondents. How do we look into these aspects about party preference? First of all, we measure whether individuals have a party preference at all by using survey items relating to who they would vote, what is their intention to vote in the case that there were elections the next day and they had the right to vote. We use this indicator rather than vote recollection, because in a lot of cases we find that some of the individuals, the respondents of the survey, did not have the right to vote because they were not naturalized. So instead of kind of segmenting our sample even further, and actually there are complexities involved in this, because for instance in Britain you don't need to be a national to vote in local elections, so that's not just for EU citizens but actually for almost all of the migrants, because it's not automatically to all of the migrants. You have to be either Commonwealth or assimilated or EU citizens, but in practical terms that means that kind of practically 100% of migrants will have the right to vote in local elections, whereas in other countries only EU citizens or nationals have the right to vote. So by focusing on vote intention, if the individual had the right to vote in this kind of hypothetical situation, we're able to incorporate all of the respondents into an analysis, and it's closer to an indicator of party identification, which we didn't have in the questionnaire. In real terms, it is approximating party identification, even if it's not measured exactly in the same way as party identification would be. So that first variable only measures whether they express any party preference or not with that question, and the second variable measures which party they name. And of course this is only the subset of those respondents who declared to have a party preference in the prior question. And we reduce all the kind of complex of the multiple options that they have, actually some of them are very complex, because in some cities the party system is highly fragmented. We reduce that complexity into two categories: those who express a preference for a left-wing party and those who express a preference for any other type of party. And the reason that we do this is because the expectation in the literature anyway is that migrants primarily vote for left-wing parties. So we group all of the left-wing parties into a single category to actually assess that expectation in a neater way. So both are dichotomous variables, and we model them with logistic multi-level regression. In terms of the explanatory variables that we use to actually capture some of the the hypothesis that I've outlined before, first in terms of ethnicity, we have two main variables. One that captures migrant origin in general, so that distinguishes the migrants from the natives, and by migrants we mean individuals of either first or second generation, so people who migrated themselves or the children of at least one parent who migrated versus the natives. And we also create variables with a specific group of origin of the individual. So for instance, in this sample for London, the study included a group of Bangladeshi, a group of Pakistani origin, of Indian origin, and a group of Black Caribbean. So these would be the three categories for London that we distinguish, and in other countries, the other categories. In terms of socioeconomic status, we look at the effect of age, gender, education, having a partner, and being in paid work. For a future draft, we will be adding some categories relating to occupation or class, but we're still in the process of cleaning our ISCO variables, which is a bit of a nightmare with different protocols having been used slightly different by the different teams. For socialization, we have one variable that captures left-right self-placement, and in terms of the whole aspect relating to homeland engagement, we have one variable relating to whether the individual voted in homeland elections or not. For policies, we have one indicator about the opinion of how difficult it is to obtain legal status in the countries where they live, and another about how difficult it is to obtain national citizenship. And in terms of political opportunity structures, we create two different indices that capture, on the one hand, the extent to which migrants are afforded with a wide range of individual rights, to capture openness in relation to individual rights, and another synthetic index on cultural or group rights. Finally, we add a bunch of migration-specific controls, such as whether the individual has the citizenship of the country, how long they've been residing in the country, or whether they were born there. So that actually captures, it's an interaction in practical terms, so that captures both, whether they are second-generation individuals and their language proficiency. Okay, so first to the descriptive results. Just to show you some of the findings about whether migrants form party preferences or not. What you see here is the percentage of individuals who express a clear party preference. So when asked if they intend to vote, they say yes. And then of course they will say which party they were intending to vote. So the first thing that you can see in the table, I hope you can see the numbers, if not the paper has been circulated, is that there's considerable differences between all migrant groups and natives in some of the cities, such as Barcelona, Madrid, Geneva, Zurich, and Milan, but only for certain types of groups in others. So here, if you focus on that first contrast in Zurich, you can see there's a huge gap. In terms of the percentage of individuals of Italian, Kosovo, and Turkish origin who express a party preference when you compare it with the natives, Swiss. In some cases, that's even kind of 30 points gap, so a considerable gap. Equally, we find huge gaps in Milan as compared to Italian natives. So Filipinos, Egyptians, and very especially Ecuadorians show a much, much smaller propensity to say that they have a party preference, that they would vote for a specific party if there were local elections the next day and they had the chance to vote. Instead, in some other city, in some other places, like in London, the GAP is only restricted to certain groups. So for London, we find that for the Bangladeshi and the Indian group, there's no significant difference in their propensity to have a party preference, and it's only among Black Caribbeans that we find such a gap. Another important difference that we find in the results is that there's considerable variation in the size of the gaps, from natives being 3.4 times more likely than the Chinese in Budapest to form a party preference, to smaller gaps in Spain, in the Spanish cities, and in Geneva. And we also find interesting gaps, for instance, in relation to the same group, but across cities. So here you can see that we have studied the Ecuadorians both in the Spanish cities and in Milan. So even if you're looking at the same national origin group, those gaps are considerable. So 71% of the Ecuadorians in Barcelona and 75% in Madrid, so quite similar in both cities, will express a party preference, and instead Ecuadorians in Milan only express, 26% of them express a party preference. So here we have some indication that the context might matter. So it's not only what migrants bring with them from the country of origin, because then you would actually see Ecuadorians to have more similar levels of party preference formation, but actually the context of settlement is likely to matter as well, given these results. The next set of findings, the table you show here, we show here, is the specific party choice, the distribution of the specific party choice by group and city. And here the important result to highlight is that in most cities, with the exception of Milan, both the migrants and the natives are more inclined to support left-wing parties. I think that this is just circumstantial. It happened to be the case that in the period when we did the surveys, left-wing parties were more supported by the majority of the population in these specific cities. It's not even the case that they are necessarily, these cities are per se left-wing cities or like left-wing strongholds, all of them. London has traditionally been a Labour Party stronghold, except when Boris Johnson runs. But that's not the case with Madrid, which has been governed by the centre-right for several decades. It's not the case for Budapest either, or for Zurich. So that's circumstantial. But and it's not the case of this countries either are necessarily left-wing. But we're not interested so much in whether 70 or 60 or 50% of the migrants are voting for left-wing parties, but what we're interested here is in the gap between the natives and the migrants. Now, evidence in support of this iron law of migrants' preference for the left, as Sagar has once called it, is quite mixed in this case. Migrants don't seem to be more inclined to support left parties than the natives in Budapest, Geneva, and Milan, at least. So there's a bit of a mixed kind of set of findings here in relation to specific party preference, at least at the bivariate level. And what we want to look at is in a more systematic manner at all of this. So what we do next in the paper, and I've not bothered to put you the kind of regression tables here on the PowerPoint slide, because in my experience there's not a chance that you'll see any of those figures. You have the papers that have been, the paper that has been circulated, so you can check the tables and the regressions there. I'll just summarize the findings that we get. First of all, in relation to having a party preference, what the multivariate results suggest is that the differences, the gaps that we found at the bivariate level still hold when you do run multivariate analysis. Natives are more likely than migrants to form party preferences in our sample. The gap is reduced when socioeconomic status variables are included, which suggests support for one of our first hypotheses. Additionally, the gap completely disappears, so the difference between the natives and the migrants stops being statistically significant when migration-specific controls are included, which suggests that actually socioeconomic factors explain away or account for the gaps that we're finding in terms of party allegiance and kind of party preference formation. Even if the gap disappears with this, we do models kind of introducing the variables in blocks, in thematic blocks that are related to our hypothesis. Even if the gap disappears, we'll still analyze the effect of the other variables to assess whether they seem to be relevant in general terms or not. And we find that political socialization aspects do contribute to explain the inclination, the likelihood to form party preferences. First of all, having or being able to relate to the left-right scale, to the left-right divide, does matter and contributes to all respondents being able to express a party preference. And importantly, only for the case of migrants, of course, voting in homeland elections is a significant correlate as well. So there's some support in the data that those political socialization factors are important. When we look at the aspects, the variables that we use as proxies of rational voting, we find only partial support for the relevance of preferences that relate to closeness. We find that opinion on difficulty of obtaining legal status is significant, but we don't find the same with opinion on naturalization policy. These results in themselves are not necessarily very surprising, because some scholarship has, recent scholarship has been indicating that in a lot of countries, migrants care much more about how work permits and residence permits are regulated than how naturalization is regulated. In countries where the work and residence permits are stable, they are not volatile in terms of actually putting their stability in terms of residence at risk, a lot of migrants will not even bother naturalizing, because they don't see any added value to that. So there's a lot of scholarship indicating recently that actually legal status is what migrants care about the most. So it might be partial support in the sense that only one of the two indicators was significant, but it might make sense in terms of real world dynamics of what actually migrants care the most, and they are making those judgments of whether to engage with the political process on the basis of the specific issues they care more about. For party preference formation, we find no support of the relevance of political opportunity structures. So the differences in rights do not account for the probability of having a party preference. So whether the integration regime or integration model is more generous or more open to migrants does not seem to make a difference in terms of how they engage or their capacity to engage with the party system and with political parties the parties supply.
If we move then to trying to explain or account for variations and gaps in the preference for the left between the natives and the migrants, the results, even in the first model already, suggests that there's no statistically significant gap between the natives and the migrants in terms of how likely they are to support the left, even in the baseline model. So even if without adding a bunch of controls, that's not statistically significant from the word go. We also find that very few socioeconomic variables are relevant, and actually only education in a negative direction. So the more highly educated individuals in general are, the less likely they are to support for the left, which is not necessarily big news. In terms of the political socialization aspects, we find that both ideological positioning and voting for a non-left party in homeland elections are significant predictors of voting for a left party in the country of residence. So if you have left-wing ideological positions, you are, and this is quite natural, more inclined to vote for a left-wing party. And your homeland elections behavior is relevant only to the extent that if you were a party supporter of a non-left party, then you will not vote for a left-wing party in the country of residence. But the other way around doesn't work. If you were a left-wing party supporter in homeland elections, you don't necessarily, that doesn't necessarily increase your likelihood to vote for a left-wing party in the country of residence. So it's more about negative party identification. So if you formed an allegiance that it's clearly non-left in another country, that will reduce your likelihood of engaging with a left-wing party in the country of residence. We find no support for the relevance of policy positions in terms of the vote choice. So we don't find that the evaluation of policies that are specific to immigration matter. And instead, in this case, we find that political opportunity structures have some purchase in explaining the gaps between natives, and actually native migrant gaps appear when we control for collective rights, suggesting that in multicultural settings, migrants are more likely to vote for left-wing parties. So for example, in a setting like London, not just because London is kind of multi-ethnic or multicultural, but also because of the policies that are implemented both in Britain and in London at the local level, we find that in settings such as London, with kind of active multicultural and accommodating policies, we get this gap between the natives and the migrants in voting for left parties. But this does not lead to ethnic bloc voting, so we find no evidence of a fragmentation because of multicultural policies. In conclusion, we find considerable cross-city and especially cross-country variations in the formation of party allegiances and in the formation of preferences for left-wing parties. There is no obvious general preference for left parties across the different European settings and countries that we've looked at. Individual level predictors seem to be more relevant than contextual ones, with socioeconomic factors being particularly relevant. Socialization aspects are consequential, but they don't explain the gap, so they're not the primary factor. And group rights are important to a certain extent for migrants' party leanings, in the sense that multicultural settings seem to lead to a more likely support for the left. If you want more information about the project, that's the website, and you will find the data available in that Harvard database. Thank you